entertainment, sports, and radio's best guest list. Live from the Zone Radio studios on Broadway on WZON Z62, WKIT HD3, and at downtownwithrichkimble.com. This is Downtown.
Oh, it is indeed. Hello there. Welcome into Sunday morning on the 19th day of April. It's the best of Downtown, brought to you by Cross Insurance, where security meets strength. Rich Kimble, Carrie Haskell here with you. Our look back at some favorite recent conversations. Only two guests this week, but they're both awfully good. Love it when they come on the show because we get so many great stories. We'll be talking with Alan Zweibel, a comedy writing legend who's got a new book out called Laugh Lines, looking at his more than 40 years of writing lines for some of the funniest people around. And in part one of that conversation, later this morning, he'll talk about his years as one of the original writers of Saturday Night Live, 1975, working with John Belushi on the Samurai sketches, creating Roseanne Dana with Gilda Radner, and much more. But we get things underway by revisiting our conversation with Perry Gilpin, who played Roz Doyle for 11 seasons on the smash NBC series Frasier. We talked with Perry about the making of the show, and then Mark Freeman of The Hollywood Reporter joined us. Mark had done an oral history on Frasier a couple of years ago and has got a new book out that is an oral history of Modern Family. And we chatted about the similarities between the two and remembered a memorable guest appearance on Modern Family by Perry Gilpin. Perry, thanks for joining us again.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Loved having you on last time. Love following you on Twitter. You don't hold anything back, and we like that a lot.
Oh, good. I'm glad you like that. I don't, do I? I should temper it a little bit, maybe.
No, not at all. Not at all. Hey, also, later on in our conversation, our friend Mark Freeman from The Hollywood Reporter will be joining us to talk a little Modern Family, because we'll discuss a connection between the shows a bit later. But I wanted to say how much I enjoyed last week when all of you got together online for Stars in the House, a little online Frasier reunion, and it's clear that you still have a tremendous bond between everybody from that show.
Oh, I knew we did, and then when I everyone kept saying that, right? You know what you're saying. People wrote that and said that, and so I just kept going back and looking and saying, what are they seeing? And then I could see it. It's just like we were just thrilled to see each other. We just really were.
And it was
I miss those people so much, and they're so dependable. You know, they're just solid, everybody. And, you know, everybody just, I guess we have, you know, we just know each other so well, we almost can guess what kind of thing is going to come out of somebody else's mouth, you know, what their take on things. And we're still excited to hear it, I guess. You know, it's really fun.
I think often the mark of a great show, to me, one of the marks of a great show, is when you have an ensemble where everyone is allowed to have their moments. And that starts with having a lead like a Kelsey Grammer, who appears to be the kind of person, as all the greats have been, who was not unhappy to let other people get the laugh.
No, that is the secret, I think, of the show from the very beginning, was that he was, just as, you know, he'll set you up, you know, as, you know, and he'll make your setup for him even funnier. You know, he's just very generous in that way. He misses no opportunity to make it funny or make it poignant or make it better, you know, and he's happy to share the load. And, you know, he wants you to. I mean, sometimes it's like, you know, he wants you to be up to his level. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's also,
he prompts you. He challenges you and makes you better, you know.
It's also clear, too, that everybody in the cast was very welcoming to those guest actors, that they became a part of the family as soon as they showed up for a table read.
Oh, yeah, they were, very much so. And a lot of people, like I had met Harriet, in a funny way, the night that I left New York and decided to go to, you know, move to Los Angeles, I was very torn But I just couldn't, you know, this is so many years ago, but I didn't want to leave New York. I just felt like I had to go try to get work. You know, there just wasn't much work in New York for someone as inexperienced as I was. So a friend of mine was doing a Man and Superman with Harriet and David Burney at the Roundabout. And I went to see it, and I went and I said, you know, Michael knew I was coming. And so Michael introduced me to Harriet that night. And she was sort of saying, why are you going to New York? You know, the actor conversation, you know, and we just talked to her. She says, well, you should do very well there, you know, in L.A. And it was just, I never forgot it because she was very supportive, you know. And so then years later, when we got to work together, I felt like she was an old friend. And you know, Kelsey and Harriet had gone to Juilliard together. And so they had they'd known each other for a long, long time. David knew Harriet. You know, Tom McGowan is married to one of my closest friends from Dallas, from when we were in theater together at Dallas Theater Center. We were in class together for 10 years. And she's from Dallas and he's from New Jersey. So I don't even know. I still can't figure out how that happened. You know, so there were just so many connections. Patrick is good friends with a bunch of people I know. And then, of course, Edward, one of the things that happened. Do you mind if I just go on and on? I'm sorry.
No, please do. That's why you're here. People can hear me any day.
Okay. I had a cup of tea. There was a show that came through at the Geffen, and it was called Jeffrey. I don't know if you know that show, but it was hilarious. And I think Harriet was in that. But Edward was in that for sure. And so Edward Hibbert. And so there were several people from that play that wound up in the regular cast of Frasier. And we all went to see it together. And it was a big hit in L.A. And I think it was a hit before that in New York. So anyway, it's a very funny play. And all those actors came through at one point, if not once, you know, more than once. And so that's how we got to know Edward. And I was surprised he wasn't there. There must have been some kind of conflict because he was, you know, we were so excited. We get the script the night, we taped on Tuesday night. And then usually we have a script in our dressing room by the time we left from shooting that night. You know, so you'd go home and read it, and you'd come back in the next day around noon and do a table read. And so that night, you know, we'd always go, hey, Edward's coming tomorrow. Harriet's coming tomorrow. Tom's coming tomorrow. Like, we'd be so excited about who was coming the next day.
Well, and I have to think, too, that that stage experience, that theater sensibility that so many of you had a tremendous influence on the way everyone played their characters.
I think you're right. I think it was a huge influence because it was, it was filmed in front of a live audience. So there was that element. And when you're on a show like Modern Family, for instance, that's a single camera. So they could go a long time without seeing each other, like the different families might go, you know, they may see each other at the table read, and then they might not see each other till the next table read if their scenes didn't overlap, you know? So, like, you know, Julie Bowen might not see Jesse for the rest of the week because they didn't have any scenes together, you know? But in our situation, when you're doing a four-camera or multi-camera, we were together all day when we were rehearsing, and, like, we had a dressing room upstairs from the stage. So we'd all be up there talking, which is so much what that was like the other day, that Stars in the House. It was just like that, everyone telling stories.
Well, yeah, and Perry, you guys talked a lot on the Stars in the House about the green room and how important that was. Can you explain to people what that meant and what went on there?
Yeah, well, that we moved on to stage 25 after Cheers left. So Cheers shot their last episode, and then 2 weeks, they, you know, took that set to the Smithsonian or wherever it went, and then 2 weeks later, the Frasier set was built and put there. So that 11-year-old show ended, and a new show came in, but it was all the same crew and all the same everything, but David and Jane and me and John, we were the only new people there. So that was really interesting. But the green room, so this was on a soundstage that just happened to have a set of stairs that went upstairs. And they say, and I think this is not hearsay, I think this is true, that the upstairs part of that sound he and Desi and Lucy's apartment.
Oh, wow.
And I think they shot on 25 as well. So they, when they were at the studio, they would live there. So our conference room where we'd have our table read and all the rooms upstairs from that, you know, were their apartment. So when you go up, there were several ways to get upstairs, but if you go upstairs to our dressing rooms, you have this big, the big makeup and costume shop on your right, and then you walk down the hall, and there was a hallway with tiny little dressing rooms, and then at the end of the hallway was a common room that I had George Wendt's old dressing room, and you know everybody had they had just left, you know, so they had used it that way too. And then we just came in, and John just parked himself. There was a chair that faced down the hallway, and that was John's chair. So he was always there, and then there were a couple of couches, another chair. So there's pictures of the cast in the green room, and as the seasons went by, our line producer, Maggie, would have these little shots of the show framed, and they covered all the walls up there by the end of the 11th year. There was every inch of those walls was covered in those little picture framed, you know, stills. So, but the good part of the green room was that it's just where we congregated. And so like if Jane and David had a scene together and they were downstairs, me and John would be in there. Kelsey was usually on the set, or he was in the green room with us, but less because he was more, you know, producing the show and in the star of the show. But, you know, you'd be up there with whoever wasn't on stage waiting to get called down to do your scene, unless you wanted to go down and watch for some reason. But then also that's where the guests would come. And so they'd be there and, you know, all of a sudden they realized, oh, there's a room I can go and sit down and, you know, I don't have to go be by myself, I can hang out, you know. And so we'd get to know people, and we all felt, as you would in most theater, that the more comfortable our guests were, the better they would do, and the better the show would be, and the better we would all do, and it would just only be good, and plus it would be fun. So everyone was very polite, and we just had the best time. And everybody, this is bad, everybody smoked, and people would come and go, you can smoke here? And we're like, yeah, you can.
Perry Gilpin with us here on the Best of Downtown for your Sunday morning. And when we come back, Mark Freeman of The Hollywood Reporter joins the conversation, and we talk about, well, some of the things that Frasier and Modern Family had in common. Next on Downtown.
At Quirk Motor City, you get a huge selection of quality pre-owned vehicles priced to fit any budget. Plus, the Quirk Motor City pre-owned difference, with a limited warranty that's 3 times longer than the average dealer's pre-owned warranty. Free main state inspections for the life of the vehicle. A free Carfax vehicle history report. And Quirk Motor City's certified pre-owned 118-point inspection. It's your quality pre-owned car. Find it at Quirk Motor City in Bangor, Belfast, Augusta, and Portland. View our pre-owned inventory online at quirkauto.com. Quirk Auto Group. We're here when you need us.
Since its founding in 1954, Cross Insurance has grown from a small family-owned agency that started in Bangor, Maine, into one of the largest super-regional insurance agencies in New England. With a network of offices throughout New England, Cross Insurance works with top carriers to provide maximum value to you, your family, and your business. We're proud to be the official insurance broker of the New England Patriots and would welcome the chance to provide security for your team. For more information, visit crossinsurance.com. Cross Insurance, where security meets strength.
Angelo's Pizzeria has been serving their customers in the Bangor area for years, and they're here for you now in these challenging times. With pizza, sandwiches, subs, calzones, salad, burgers, chicken, and so much more, Angelo's has something for everyone in the family. Now offering curbside service and delivery, call Angelo's at 942-5553 and then pick up your food at 499 Hammond Street in Bangor, Angelo's Pizzeria.
Spring's thaw is the perfect breeding season for potholes. These pesky road hazards can play havoc with your tires, wheels, and front-end alignment. Here are some tips from Bangor Tire Company for driving over badly damaged roads. Slow down. Apply your brakes before hitting a pothole and release them just prior to impact. Keep your tires properly inflated. And finally, if your car's steering ever starts to feel strange, have your front-end alignment estimate checked right away at Bangor Tire Company, 35 Market Street, Bangor.
When it's time to buy appliances, wouldn't you rather deal with experienced local people you can trust? The folks at Dunnett Appliance and Mattress have been in business serving the Bangor area for years with great prices, friendly faces, and expert service. They know their products inside and out, so their service doesn't end with your purchase. Shop where you can see the finest selection of the best appliances available to match your budget, needs, and style, and get exceptional service for the life of your product. Dunnett Appliance and Mattress, 63 Washington Street, Penobscot Plaza, Bangor. Dunnett has done it again.
Hi, this is Eric.
And Christine.
From the Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, inviting you to come experience everything that we have to offer.
Sure, you already know we have the most expertly cultivated selection of fine wine, craft beer, meads, and ciders in the region.
But have you tried our wide variety of cheeses, cured meats, and gourmet goods? Our exclusive line of Tavolo specialty oils and vinegars, now featuring apple cider vinegar and organic sunflower seed oil made right here in Maine? Our olive bar. And don't miss the crusty baguettes.
We can put it all together in a brilliant platter or gift basket packaged with locally made wine and cheese accessories.
And while our selection is impressive, most importantly, know that we offer the service and knowledge to help anyone from the seasoned buyer to the nervous newcomer.
Bangor Wine and Cheese, family owned and operated since 2000, is located at 86 Hammond Street in the heart of downtown Bangor.
Come in, let us cater to you and discover why we say drink, eat, live better.
Back on the best of downtown in your Sunday morning. Mark Freeman of The Hollywood Reporter working on a brand new oral history of Modern Family, which recently wrapped its 11-year run on ABC. And Mark joined us as part of our conversation with Perry Gilpin to talk about some of the connections between Modern Family and Frasier. Mark, welcome back.
Well, hello, and hi, Perry.
Hi, Mark.
What a fun meeting we've got with everybody here. And Mark, we wanted to talk and have you on to discuss the connections, because there are a number of connections between Modern Family and Frasier.
That is correct. The two biggest being probably Christopher Lloyd, who's one of the co-creators, and Jeff Greenberg, who was casting director.
And Steve Levkamp.
Perry knows both of them intimately.
Yeah, can you talk about Chris Lloyd and Steve Levitan and Jeff Greenberg, Perry, and what they meant to you and to the cast of both shows?
Yes, well, I mean, Chris Lloyd introduced me to my husband and his wife, Arlene. They introduced me to my husband. So, you know, I'm very grateful to them. And Steve Levitan I've worked on Wings with Steve and Chris, so I've known them for many, many years, and my husband is very close with Steve Levitan as well. And so, you know, they're not only coworkers, but they're really dear friends and incredibly talented ones. So that they mean a lot. And then Jeff is my champion. He helped me get many, many jobs and supported, you know, liked my work and brought me in and helped me make things work. And is that way for a lot of actors. But I will always love Jeff, because I wouldn't have been on Frasier without him. And that was a wonderful, wonderful experience.
And Mark, we were talking with Perry earlier about the bond between the cast members on Frasier, and I have to think the same thing exists as you've gotten to know the people involved with Modern Family.
Yeah, my experience has been with these oral history articles, and definitely with this book, that shows that have a history, meaning probably at least 5-6 years of people spending that much amount of time, or as someone from the Modern Family book said, you spend more time with cast and crew than you do your own family, that you go through a lot, the natural aspects and cycles of life, of birth, death, marriage, divorce, movement, changing. And then on top of that, you just are doing something that is creating art, and you're doing it together, and you're contributing, and everyone has a voice. And I think in the end, what you get is, as somebody from the crew had told me, this true family. So it's a modern family in which sometimes you get mad at each other, but you love each other at the end of the day, and you're all working towards the same goal. And so not every families aren't perfectly neat. And in that sense, modern family isn't. But at the same time, being a family, they all love each other and loved working together for 11 plus years.
And another crossover is that, Perry, you had a very memorable guest appearance. Can you talk about your character, Jeannie, when you appeared on Modern Family?
Yes, I got a call. I got a call one day. I think I was in a spin class, and I came out, and I got this call from Jeff going, they want you to come do an episode, and then for some reason, I didn't know what it was. I just texted him or something. I was saying, yes, yes, yes. And he goes, well, wait, do you want to know what it is? I go, no, I don't. And he goes, it's a hooker. And I was like, oh, perfect, perfect, perfect. So I read it and I loved it. And I love Ty. I love Julie. I love the girls. And Ariel and Sarah, I adore them. And it has been really fun to watch them grow up and on film. But I was so excited to work with Fred Willard because I've never gotten to work with him before. And he used to come by this Fraser set to say hi to John because they were friends. And he was just he's just one of those people that you run into and, you know, he's just part of the fabric of Los Angeles. So so I was just so excited. So I went and did it. And not only was it the guy directing it, with Steve Levitan, but the guy that was like just sort of the technical director of it is this guy named Jim Hens, who I went to University of Texas with. I had known him forever, had never seen him since. And it was so bizarre. I didn't even know he was out here. So we had a ball that day. It was really, really great. So I came back and I walked into my school, my kids' elementary school, and the couple that started that school are Jane Leave's in-laws. Her husband's parents started the school like 40 years ago. So I've known Joel, the head of the school, since they got married. So forever, you know. So I walk in and Joel goes, oh, Perry, I caught you on Modern Family last night. You know, but there was a guy, one of the teachers at that school, her husband, Phil, is the art director for, Bob's Burgers, which is every bit as risque as that was. And I go, Phil draws Bob's Burger. You know, I tried to buzz him just to take this. But then the thing was that I wasn't sure if my kids would actually see it. But then one of the kids that they went to school with was such a huge Modern Family fan, little Amanda MTS. She loved it so much that she announced to the class what I was and what I did and what I said. So they got home and they were like, Mom, I had to explain the whole thing to my children because of that. So, and that's a hard thing to explain to a 10-year-old.
I would think so. And so, Mark, I understand that, Perry does make an appearance in your Modern Family book that's coming up soon.
He does. There's a chapter, there's a gazillion chapters, but there's a chapter on guest stars and recurring characters that people mentioned and held dear and wanted to hear from. So Perry's there, Elizabeth Banks, Josh Gad, Matthew Broderick, Benjamin Bratt, Peyton Manning. There's also a Barbra Streisand story, but I did not reach out to Barbara because she's actually not in the episode. It ends up being her voice. She recorded a 20-second bit on her iPhone because they figured they would never be able to get her there in person. But one of the writers, who's a writer from Frasier, incidentally, Jeffrey Richmond, is very good friends with her and used to write her material for her stage performances.
That's amazing. We're talking with Mark Freeman, Perry Gilpin here on Downtown. And Perry, I think it was Mark that actually asked you about this in his wonderful oral history of the show. But you based the character of Roz on a very close personal friend.
Well, yes, I did. I did. And I didn't. The writers didn't know her. But as they started writing, you know, it's interesting when you start to see things. As Mark was saying, it's very intimate. The whole, you start, they're writing for you, you know, and you're like, did you make this up? Or did you talk to someone in my family? I mean, there was one time when they had Bobby Sherman come on, you know, and Bobby Sherman was, I wrote a letter to him when I was 9 years old asking him to marry me. And I meant it with all my heart. I was in love with Bobby Sherman. And they wrote that about Roz. And there was no way for them to know that. There's no way for them to know that. Unless somebody told them. But I could not get that out of them. But so Bobby Sherman came to the show. And I said I couldn't, like, stop fangirling because it was so real, you know. But then there are other things that are not real, you know, at all and have nothing to do with you. And I was raised in a very Baptist, religious, you know, restricted, oppressed, you know, situation in Dallas. So there were a lot of things about Roz's freedom that weren't necessarily all me. But I had a really good friend who it was to a T. And so I'd go, okay, this is her. I know exactly what this is. And I've seen it in action. And I'm always like, I always love it and it cracks me up. And it's what I, you know, it's one of my favorite things about her, her freedom. And it's just like an East Coast woman. I'm sorry. I hope that's not, it's not a Southern woman is what I'm trying to say.
All right, Perry, everybody wants to know, and maybe there is no answer yet, what is the status of a possible reboot of the show?
It's the same as it's always been. I mean, there's a lot of talk about it. And there's a lot of movement right now, but I think that the main issue for everyone is that it be, you know, as good or better as the original. I don't know if we can do better, but I mean the goal would be to aim for that because no one wants it not to be, you know. So I think that's what keeps it in limbo a little bit, which is fine with everybody. And I'm sure it's even fine with the audience, you know. But I hope we do it. Some of the things I've heard sound wonderful if it can come to pass. But I think we just all have the very same fears.
And Marcus, for your wonderful book, I know it's going to be wonderful because everything you write is terrific. Your book on Modern Family is due out in mid-May. You'll be back on to talk with us about it. But what's the official publication date?
May 19th.
Well, we'll look forward to that, and we'll have you back on to talk about it as we get closer to that. Mark, thanks so much for checking in with us here during our conversation with Perry, and we'll see you again in a few weeks' time.
That sounds great. Great being here, and bye, Perry.
Bye, Mark. Bye. And thank you for coming.
And Perry, thanks to you as always for being on with us. And thanks for the suggestion of having Mark on, too. That was great. It's awesome to talk with you again. Love what you're doing on Twitter. We look forward to much more from you. And thanks again for making time for us. Stay safe.
Thank you, Rich. You too.
Perry Gilpin and The Hollywood Reporter's Mark Freeman talking with us here on Downtown on this Sunday morning. When we come back, Alan Zweibel talks about his new book, Laugh Lines, looking back at decades of writing with and for some of the funniest people in the business. That's next on Downtown.
What makes a community thrive? The people who live in it. When you use your First National Bank Visa debit card at participating local businesses, you save on everyday purchases while supporting the people who work day in and day out to make your town a vibrant, unique community. Receive cash back on purchases and support the local businesses that make our communities thrive. Bank local, buy local. Learn more at dreamfirstrewards.com. First National Bank, dream first because you can. Member FDIC, equal housing lender.
When it comes to your health, early detection is the best protection. That's why the St. Joseph Regional Breast Care Center provides 3D mammography to offer better answers and greater peace of mind, identifying problem areas that a standard mammogram might miss. It provides precise images for all women, including those with dense breast tissue. Call 907-1682 to schedule your 3D mammogram at the St. Joseph Regional Breast Care Center. 3D, providing peace of mind for you, your family, and your loved ones.
As the public health situation continues, Central Street Farmhouse, Greater Bangor's leader for do-it-yourselfers since 2010, is now taking orders online or by phone only for all your ingredients, supplies, and emotional support to make your own beer, cider, mead, wine, and more. Have it shipped or stop out front for curbside pickup. Social distancing is a great time to discover or rediscover home brewing. Call or place your order online. Follow Central Street Farmhouse on Facebook and Instagram. Call 942-4454 or shop online at centralstreetfarmhouse.com.
Bennett Auto Center is the place to go for full-service auto care. From oil changes to engine jobs, they can handle your every need. Stop in at 24 Thatcher Street in Bangor and talk with the experienced local people at Bennett's. They offer great service, competitive prices on a wide range of tires, and best of all, people you can trust. Visit the website for more information at BennettAutoCenter.com. Give them a call at 947-0351 or drive on into Bennett Auto Center, 24 Thatcher Street, Bangor.
Hi, this is Mike Toole of ClearPoint Capital in Bangor. I've been an investment advisor for over 25 years. Our firm is local, independent, and now with the addition of my two children, John and Jillian, we're truly a family business. At ClearPoint Capital, we help our clients grow and protect their investments to help meet their goals. Why not see what our team can do for you? Give us a call today at 307-7718 to schedule a free consultation. ClearPoint Capital, our family helping yours.
Dr. Jacob Valley of Bangor Dental Associates explains how they handle patients who might be anxious about a dental visit.
Dentistry's come a long way in the last years, and people come in who haven't been in a while and are shocked at the technology and how much smoother everything operates. If you come in and you haven't been in a while, just at the first appointment, you'll be amazed at how comfortable you'll be and how we make you feel really special and at home at this place.
For more information about Dr. Michelle Speckhart, Dr. Jacob Valley, and the team at Bangor Dental Associates, call them at 207-947-7503.
Hi, I'm Tom from Candlelight Welding Club. We offer music and entertainment services that you can't get anywhere else, including songwriting classes or one-on-one sessions, beginner's guitar lessons, and studio song recording with Josh Philbrick of the Philbrick Brothers Studio. We can help you bring your inner thoughts and feelings to life in songs that will last forever. So call me, Tom, at 207-991-2729 or email us at candlelightweldingclub@gmail.com or message us on Facebook today and let's do something awesome together.
Since its founding in 1954, Cross Insurance has grown from a small family-owned agency that started in Bangor, Maine, into one of the largest super-regional insurance agencies in New England. With a network of offices throughout New England, Cross Insurance works with top carriers to provide maximum value to you, your family, and your business. We are proud to be the official insurance broker of the New England Patriots and would welcome the chance to provide security for your team. For more information, visit crossinsurance.com. Cross Insurance, where security meets strength.
Back on the Best of Downtown, our next guest, one of the original writers for Saturday Night Live, starting in 1975. He would create the Rosanna Dana sketches with Gilda Radner, write a number of the samurai sketches for John Belushi and Buck Henry. He's the author of a brand new book called Laugh Lines. And here's part one of our conversation with comedy writing legend Alan Zweibel, looking at the Saturday Night Live years. Loved your book so much, I knew I would laugh. What I didn't expect is to tear up reading the foreword when you talked about going back to SNL for the 40th reunion and thinking about all of those who weren't there for that.
Well, you know, it was a very emotional time, and you're quite right. It swung both ways. It was a joyous celebration. It was 40 years. My God, and, you know, I went with my wife. I met my wife on the show, and it was a celebration of this new show that started in 1975. And I looked around, and I go, wow, look at all the people who were here, from the Mick Jaggers to my pal Larry David. And it's just, you know, every which way and every year, athletes and whatever. So it was a great, great celebration. On the other hand, as I say in the book, you know, it's like going to your old neighborhood and you expect to see the same people living in the same houses as you were when you lived there. So when I walked into the studio, my last reference, and I had been to that studio a number of times since, but on an evening like this, you know, there were apparitions. There was Belushi, there was Gilda, there was a mentor of mine named Herb Sargent and Michael O'Donoghue. So it was a lot of memories that took place there. I was there for 5 years, and it was such a impactful time in all of our lives. It was very emotional, you know. Plus, we were still alive, you know. It's just like a high school reunion. Who's here? Who's happy with their lives? Who's, you know, who's feeling good about things since then? And the nostalgia was just, you can imagine, it was just dripping with it.
One of the many people that you worked with and I know was a hero of yours. He's always been a comedy hero of mine and has passed away since the last time we talked with you. Can you talk a little bit about what Buck Henry meant to you in your career and as a friend?
You know, both aspects of Buck were monumental for me. I grew up, you know, on Long Island. My dad worked in New York City. And when I would come in and run errands for him, no matter where the errand was, I'd make sure it went by 30 Rock, you know. And because at the time, this was in the mid-60s, you know, Johnny Carson had the Tonight Show upstairs. And there was a show called That Was the Week That Was that starred David Frost. And one of the guys in the show was Buck Henry. And watching that show, I took an immediate liking to him. And then I saw him in The Graduate, and I realized that he wrote The Graduate. And I was a huge fan of Get Smart, and he had co-created Get Smart with Mel Brooks. And so when in college, I used to watch Buck go on The Tonight Show and just talk to Johnny Carson for 8 minutes about nothing, absolutely nothing that would make me laugh. So when he came to do the show, I was in awe. I must say I was a little nervous. I figured he was a guy that, he was Buck Henry. You know, he was godlike when it came to somebody who was witty and somebody who was a writer and was such an influence on the culture. So when I became friends with him, and we became very close friends, you know, the entree was I used to write these samurai sketches for John Belushi, and Buck was in most of them. He was a perfect stooge for John's samurai character. So because I wrote them and we rehearsed it together, we started becoming friendly. And then we went out for lunches and dinners and became terrific, terrific friends through the years. And what I got from Buck more than anything was longevity. What I got from him was, because here's a guy who, you know, we tend to look at somebody, our heroes especially, and look at them as like they were always on top. And I saw him through some failures that he had, some foul tips. And he just kept his head down, and he was a writer. And up until his death, at the age of 89, he was still writing. And he taught me, not by telling me, but by example, that we do what we do, and we just keep doing it. And, some things people will embrace, some things people, for whatever reason, will turn their backs on. But this is the business we've chosen. This is the way that we were born, and just keep going. So I got to tell you that he was a monster loss when we got the word.
A big smile came to my face when you were recounting your childhood and an album that your parents used to play that I used to hear in my house all the time growing up, an album called You Don't Have to Be Jewish.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I'm thrilled because so many people don't remember that anymore. My parents played comedy albums, and that was one of them. It was also Alan Sherman's record. Mm. And when Kennedy was president, he was the first family. But You Don't Have to Be Jewish was, it had this cast. You have Lou Jacoby and Olin Polanka, and people that nobody's heard of since. Really. And it was little sketches and, and little scenes, audible scenes that took place between these cast members. And I remember my parents laughing, and I didn't like what they listened to, but the comedy albums were different. And this was older school, but it sure made me laugh a lot.
Well, it was good preparation for your first professional work, writing lines for comedians in the Catskills, as you call it in the book, writing for the Willie Lomans of stand-up comedy.
Well, you know, and the reason I dubbed it as that is that these guys didn't have television shows. They didn't have, something that they strove to have that. Their hopes were that they would play in these nightclubs in the Catskill hotels. And in the heyday of the Catskills, the 50s and the 60s, you know, the people like Dean Martin, Jerry Lewis, and Red Buttons, and Alan King, and Tony Fields, that was a breeding ground. And it was a jumping off point to huge careers that they got on the West Coast. They got their own TV series. And these guys, that went up, by the time I got there, the Catskills were dying. The hotels were starting to close one by one. And these were the guys that were left behind. And I called them the Willie Lomans because they got in their car, and just like Willie Loman would drive up to Boston or wherever to sell, they would go from their homes and drive up to the different hotels. They would sell their jokes. Okay? They were like the workers. You know, they weren't the executives, you know? And then they get back in the car after the show. You know, they probably got their paycheck, and they drove home. And there was something about the itinerant nature of not having, once again, a studio to go to. You know what I mean? Where they had a TV show. It was the also-ran. You know, they were Willie Loman. They went, they had their jokes, and they went up and sold their wares.
And who knew that you could even get paid by the pound for writing jokes?
Well, you know, that was such a weird expression. When I started, this was in the 72, the going rate up there was $7 a joke. And then it started to, you know, if the word go around about you, you can say, okay, I want $10, I want $12, you know, it went like that. But then the next thing was, if you wrote routines, they paid you per minute. That meant the delivered minute. Okay, so... usually a page of jokes is what would take a minute to tell. So there was four or five jokes on the page. And that was all about one subject. But I learned a phrase which people seem to be intrigued by is a pound of jokes, which was basically a handful of jokes about anything you thought was funny. And I had once asked, well, how much is in a pound? And, you know, I said, well, 16. And I go, well, geez. You know, that means that each pound is an ounce. And you know, if you multiply each joke by $7, which I ordinarily get, for $100 for a pound, I'm losing money that way. So we would bargain how much was a pound.
We're talking with Alan Zweibel. His new book is called Laugh Lines, 40 Years Trying to Make Funny People Funnier. And you wrote for those Catskill comics, but is it safe to say that you wanted to write for your own generation and not your parents' generation?
Well, what had happened was, you know, these guys were older than me, and I was the same age as their children. And so I was the same age as their kids who were rebelling against the establishment that they were talking about. So, you know, it was the age of Woodstock and Vietnam and Watergate. So what I didn't want to write for my parents. That wasn't my sweet spot. I lived in a different place mentally, so I took all the jokes those guys wouldn't buy for me. And there were two clubs in New York City at the time. One was called The Improvisation. The other was called Catch a Rising Star. And I took the jokes that those old guys wouldn't buy for me. I got on stage, and my plan was to deliver those jokes and with the hopes that somebody would like the material. I didn't want to be a comic. It was my way of advertising how I wrote. And ultimately, Lorne Michaels liked the material and gave me a job on a new show that he was putting together called Saturday Night Live that was going to premiere the following fall.
How would you describe yourself in that brief time as a stand-up comedian?
Awful. Just awful. If people liked the joke, they laughed, and I felt fine. But I couldn't perform, you know, so... If somebody heckled me or if a joke fell flat, it was just, I didn't know what to do. I just started sweating. <You know?
laughs> Last time you were on with us, you told us about that first meeting, the first writer's meeting with Gilda Radner hiding behind the potted plant there. You went on to have such a great working and personal relationship with Gilda through the years. And I thought it was very interesting in the book. You talked about, a specific way that Gilda would help you with nerves when you had to appear in sketches.
Well, she was, what she would do, because it was live TV, and I've since gotten over it, thank God. I go on a lot of talk shows and I do speaking engagements, but in those days, I was so nervous. I was afraid if I go on live TV that, I would either faint or I would just lose my words entirely and forget how to talk, or I would have no control out of what came out of my mouth, like sort of like a Tourette's thing. And I was just so frightened that what Gilda would do is give me a shot of whiskey or vodka or a little bit too much wine just to calm my nerves.
I was interested to read about the process that you two went through. And it was a grueling process creating and refining the Roseanne Dana sketches.
Well, we were married to that character. We put all our energy into whatever we wrote. And it was a great degree of sublimation, at least it was for me. And so what we would do is go back and forth. I would write a draft, and I would submit it to her the day of the show, and she would take out a red pencil like a school mom and start marking it up. And then I'd be pissed off because I was up all night, writing. And here she is, she's passing judgment and making, corrections. And as I left the dressing room and would go up to my office, I'd look at what she wrote and I'd go, oh, God, she's right. This is better than what I had. And then I would go, well, I'll show her, and I would try to top her. And it would go back and forth all day that by the time we got it on the air, it was, for the most part, really humming. But we weren't talking to each other. It was just, it was like the worst of a bad marriage. You know what I mean? And it was what I would imagine. And creatively, we had some success.
The makeup process after the, for lack of a better term, fights over the sketches were sometimes lengthy. And there's a great story about how Woody Allen helped solve one of the fights.
Well, what had happened was, like any couple, the fight is over if one can make the other one laugh. And there was a brunch we attended, and Gilda wanted to make up, and I just felt like being, in an argument that much longer, I needed to be mad longer than she needed to be mad. And so when we were in a somebody's apartment and there was a brunch and she tried to get my attention to make me laugh, make funny faces, do stuff. And I kept turning away. I didn't want to give her the satisfaction of me laughing and I wanted to stay mad. And at one point, Woody Allen happened to come by and he had a couple of plates filled with brunch stuff, bagels and, lox and two cups of coffee. And Gilda knew that he was my idol, and so I sort of saw out of the corner of my eye. She stopped him. She put a hand on each of his shoulders, and he didn't know who she was. And she said, "I'm sorry, but I got to make Lydell laugh." So there was a step down into a living room. She sort of pushed him down the step, and all the food went flying all over the place. And I started laughing, and that was the end of our fight.
You also write about the most infamous guest hosting appearance ever on SNL, Milton Berle on there. And, you got to see the real legend of Milton Berle up close and personal.
Well, his legend preceded him, and he, I had written before I got to SNL, I wrote for a lot of the Friars Club roast. And he was generally the roast master. And, those were all SAG luncheons at that time, and because the club wasn't co-ed. This was in the earlier days. This was in the 70s when I started going there. It wasn't until the late 80s that they admitted women. So it was a big boys club, and they would have a roast that would have 2,000 people in the ballroom of a huge hotel. And Milton, you know, I never wrote to him, but I would write about him, you know, for whoever was, you know, who was ever part of the roast that I was writing for. You know, and the thing you do with any of those things is you write towards the person's stereotype and you make fun of it. And there's two stereotypes that Milton Berle had was, one, that he stole other people's jokes, but two, is that he had the, well, let's just say the longest differential, okay? It was like a walking tripod. And when he came to host the show, I was in his dressing room and he was wearing a short bathrobe that came sort of like mid-thigh. And I said to him, you know, I said, boy, it's really interesting that I'm meeting you because for so many years I wrote about your penis. And, you know, here I am, I'm meeting you. And, you know, I used to write these jokes like, you know, it was so big that after his circumcision, they used the foreskin to cover the infield at Yankee Stadium. You know, those kind of jokes. And he said, oh, you've never seen it. I go, I was tongue-tied. He goes, would you like to? And I was somewhere between the N and the O in no when he, you know, he just opened his robe. And, yeah, he took out, an anaconda. It was, you know, So I thought. And he was notorious for that. He would take it out and show it to anybody, whether they wanted to see it or not. That's what he would do.
Alan Zweibel with us here on Downtown. You mentioned you met your wife, Robin, on the show. One of my favorite stories in the book is the time that both of your mothers were cast as extras in a sketch.
Well, our parents hadn't met yet, and Robin was a production assistant, and her job, among the many duties of a production assistant, was to fill a room, you know, on a sketch, you know, with extras. And there was a bar mitzvah sketch. Kirk Douglas was the host, and he played the bar mitzvah boy's grandfather. So there was a dais that had, you know, Belushi and Bill Murray and Gilda and Kirk Douglas, you know, like I said, as the grandfather. And so Robin thought it was a good idea that maybe our mothers could meet. So she cast them both to be extras in it. And Robin had no way of knowing that my mother would get really upset that Robin's mother had a better table at the bar mitzvah. A little cat fight ensued.
That is Alan Zweibel. His new book is called Laugh Lines, and you can hear part two of our conversation coming up next Sunday morning on The Best of Downtown when Alan talks about his work with Gary Shandling, Billy Crystal, Martin Short, and much more. Our thanks to Alan, thanks to Perry Gilpin, Mark Freeman of The Hollywood Reporter, and thanks to you for joining us. We're back live tomorrow afternoon. We'll talk with actress, Emmy Award-winning actress, Carolyn Hennessy. Get movie reviews from Alan Adams of The Main Edge on Pass the Popcorn. And we crown a new Downtown Madness champion. Who will it be? Will they show up to get their award, such as it is, live on the show? Well, you'll find out when we do tomorrow afternoon. Hope you'll join us at 4 here on Downtown. Have an enjoyable rest of your Sunday. We'll see you next time around on Z62 Retro Radio. Forget all your troubles, forget all your cares, so go downtown, where I'm